शिला गुरुदेव की जय। श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय। श्री हरिनाम संकीर्तन की जय। श्री श्री गौर नित्यानंद की जय। श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय। श्री श्री दौजी गोपाल की जय। श्री श्री राध माधव की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद So good morning to all of you again. Welcome. Thanks so much for your presence in this Japa retreat that's probably getting to a close gradually, and a close between quotation mark, because of course, as we will see, the idea when we experience this type of thing is the last thing you think is this is finishing. This is just beginning, and so many things are. I'm becoming aware of so many things that need investing my life there. So it's one beginning after another. So in that sense, the idea is to continue extending our retreat experience and our actualizing our connection with Srinam. So today we are in what's fifth lecture, I think, fifth meeting. We will be speaking about prayer, accessing the domain of prayer. But as usual, let's begin with some brief summary, recap of what we mentioned yesterday. Yesterday we have been speaking about Nama Parat and trying to approach it from a noble side, if you will, or basically trying to emphasize the positive side to it. Of course, not only with Nama Parat, not only with Apara, but with every single, as we mentioned, most probably word of our Gaudiya glossary. Taking the time to check if we need to update the way we are expressing those terms, and therefore understanding the real ultimate intention of them. So in connection with Aparad in itself, we try to do that. And Aparad being basically that which goes against love, which opposes our best interest, basically. And of course, as we will see, we mentioned 10 of them, main known ones from the Padma Purana, but basically to engage in aparad has to do with having their heart in the wrong place, let's say. Being indifferent, being ungrateful, being bad intention, being hypocrite, being all those things that you are not supposed to be as a devotee. No. So if you are really sincerely trying not to be those things, then we say there won't be real chance for aparad. But of course, again, we shouldn't take like this idea of sincerely trying those things. We have to really play out what does it mean to try to be honest, transparent, authentic, sincerely. And maybe probably there's always something else we can do for that to happen further. So it's always good to keep that eye that direction. So the 10 Nama Paras, I will briefly mention them, and we won't go into the details. It will be basically to repeat the whole class again. So the first one was Sadhu Ninda, which was criticism of the Sadhu, the Sadhvi, Vaishnavis. Somehow that's considered the worst, because we receive Nama from the Sadhu. Sadhus are so dear to Krishna's heart, and Krishna's heart is not different from Nama's heart. So the heart of the name are the sadhus. So you, again, bite the hand that is feeding you. That makes no sense whatsoever. So in one sense, that's the worst offense, but somehow it may be the easiest one to engage in. Be careful. That's what so much caution was put, because on a daily basis, you relate with Vaishnavas, and very easily you can fall into this. While thinking wrongly, speaking wrongly, acting wrongly, not honoring that divine principle of Vaishnavism. So we mentioned 6 of those Vaishnava aparad, and of course we also mentioned how to eradicate them, or ideally how to behave not to having to eradicate them. And of course invoking the positive counterpart of it, which is to be affectionate, to be humble, to be sincere, to be willing to serve, and so on. Appreciate all that is coming from the reality of the Vaishnava, and that will keep us protected from the don'ts, if you will. And this same antidote will be applied to all the other apparatus, if you will, how to counteract them, no, and how to avoid having to counteract them. remaining in good shelter, in good guidance, with proper sambandha, proper education of what is what, and willing to learn, willing to be transformed by grace, the rest will be history. You will have to fill the empty page of the Bhagavad waiting for you there. So the second offense was to consider Shiva's names, or by extension some other devas' names or qualities, as independent of Bhagavan, which basically has to do with seeing many gods and not seeing one absolute truth and ascribing to other entities the standing that only belongs, if you will, to the Deva with capital D, if you will. So that will be the second one. And of course we mentioned many things about that, how the names of the devas are first names of God and so on. The third one was Guru Ravagnya, which means to neglect the principle of Guru, Guru Tattva, which another one of the worst ones, if you want to put that in the category. It's similar to Sadhuninda, but specifically pointing to the principle of Guru, who gives Nam, who instructs how to avoid offenses. So if you attack that, if you will, if you neglect that, it again goes against your best interests, goes against your chanting, basically. And we dealt with this argument that some may say, well, but the pure devotee never feels offended, so you can do whatever you like, there's no apparatus ever. It's not like that. No. They may not feel offended, but it doesn't mean that there won't be any reaction. But the very fact of thinking like that, there's immediate reaction or that type of calculation. Then the fourth one was Shastra Ninda, to commit offense or criticism of these holy texts, Shastra scriptures. Another worse one, since Shastra will reveal what the Nam is, what the Guru is, what the Sadhu, all these definitions, all this Sambandha Gyan is coming from revelation. So if we, again, walk against that, that's against our main interest. The fifth one was Arthavad. Arthavad had to do with considering whatever Shastra is saying about Nam, whatever praise is there, as exaggeration. Well, actually we mentioned there may be exaggeration in Shastra, but not in connection to Nam. Connection to Nam, there is never enough all that you can tell about it. Which one then? The sixth one is to ascribe Hari Nam Nikalpanam, ascribe imaginary meanings to the name. Now for me, the name of Krishna means this. For me, it means that. Well, it's not so much according to my imagination. For you can say for me, according to your stage, according to what Shastra is telling, what name is. We are sharing different perspectives on the name, and you can feel in this state, for me, I approach name in this particular way or mood. As we say in the first class, I won't give you the only one magical formula how to approach the name, and that's the only possible one. There will be possibilities according to, but it's not that anything goes. No? So the idea here is not so much the name has to accommodate to my imagination, but I have to accommodate to Nam's imagination. Krishna lives in, as Guru Maharaj will say, he lives in his world of fantasy. No? Krishna lives in fantasy land called Vrindavan, and the name is no different from that fantasy boy. So, of course, that fantasy is the highest reality. No? It's not an illusion. So we are to be willing to align ourselves with God's fantasy, if you want to put it like that, not vice versa. No. Our fantasy land is a terrible movie, actually. You know, it's a nightmare. It's not a fantasy land in the idyllic way of the term. Then the seventh one was to sin on the strength of the name. I think that speaks for itself. You know, just trying to abuse the name and calculate and use the highest thing to justify the lowest. No? Justify the unjustifiable. Degrade myself and then call Krishna to, not to protect me, but actually just to relieve me from the reaction of degradation so I can continue degrading myself in a more powerful, upgraded version. So using such a thing as the name that can provide me such a deeper and noble possibilities just to justify the unjustifiable. We could say that's one of the words also. The eighth one was to consider the name as ordinary piety. We have nothing against mundane piety, but just one or the other doesn't fit in the same category. No, mundane, pious activities, punya, is one thing in the realm, let's say even of satya, of sattva. But another thing is trinam, with all its reach and purpose. Then the ninth aparad was to instruct those who lack faith, or who are not interested in hearing, and just to insist and not expose, but impose on those who lack shraddha, and try to convince by force. That's offensive to the name. That's an insult and violence to the person. And you are the main one damaged for doing that. No? And also this offense, of course, indirectly shows, if you have that faith there, that's the adhikar to receive instruction on the name. Shraddha is the adhikar. And then the tenth one is that despite hearing the glories of the name, can come closer if they want to put another word. Okay, there's a place there. Okay. Despite hearing non-mahatmya of the sacred glories of the name, to continue living a life absorbed in ahammameti, or the sense of I me mine, and not do anything about it. That's the point. It's not that still you are doing your best, but something of that remains. That doesn't mean this offense. Offense means you are hearing all that is in the name, all that is coming to you. You hear about the world of ahammameti. You are in between the two, if you will. And something is expected from you, some honest endeavor to gradually go from one to the other. But if you are not doing that, and even you pose as a devotee, external, whatever, that's not becoming at all. And then we added an 11th one. We are making a summary from yesterday, just in case. So you came on time yet. Sometimes an 11th one, which is added to the 10th one, is pramada, which we say pramada can mean inattention, or it can mean madness. Because basically the idea is, you are calling the name, and when the name is coming, you are ignoring the name. So that's technically speaking madness. Now, if I call Brajasundar, can you come? And she comes, and when she's in front of me, I start like to behave as she doesn't exist. She says, Maharaj, are you crazy? Of course I will reply, yes. But not crazy of love of God, unfortunately. And that's the madness. I mean, free will means you choose which type of madness you want, if you will. So that's the idea, no? Pramada, inattention, has to do with not investing ourselves fully, again, similar to the previous one, not giving all that we can for being properly attentive and chanting carefully. And we have to chant carefully. It's a relationship we are cultivating. So basically, the antidote, as we've mentioned, to all the apparatus is the same. And the problem, in one sense, is always the same, in general terms. To be neglectful, ungrateful, hypocrite, complacent, all these type of lists that we actually don't want to be part of our life, our identity. We are not that, actually. So it's good to keep that in mind, just in case. And we conclude giving this example of a medicine, such as a medicine in Ayurveda can cure you and save you, also can kill you without proper prescription and knowing proper diet, knowing what to take, what not to take. So the point was that all these apparats, you have to be careful not only to avoid apparat while chanting, but there's a whole lifestyle that should be there to accompany our chanting, to give support to the main sadhana of chanting. So for us, the main sadhana is chanting, but the rest of our lives is in the service of that central sadhana. So we should develop a lifestyle in which apparat is not part of it in any moment, basically. So as we conclude the train, not to leave any whiff of neurosis in anyone, we mentioned that now apparat could be defined as engaging in apparat, but not making the effort to counteract apparat, if you will. Or chanting and not making the effort to counteract apparat. That's apparat. But if you somehow, because of some reason, you engage in some of these apparats while trying your best not to do it for whatever reason, that falls into another category. And so that's the generosity of our guardians. So, some not so brief recap. So we will continue today with today's topic, which will be on prayer. Our Guru Maharaj spoke about that some days ago from one perspective. He spoke on Sunday on Vandanam, which is one of the nine limbs of Navalaksham Bhakti, which means to offer prayers, whether composed by oneself or composed by some other previous authorities, to offer those prayers, repeat them, Or also Vandana means to offer obeisances and literally put our head on the ground. No, like an act of humility and surrender, which is not only some physical aerobic or something like that, but it has to do with creating an internal disposition. So these two fall into the category of Vandanam. But also he at the end mentioned, also we could speak about prayer as a spirit of conducting ourselves in the chanting, in life, in our lifestyle. He didn't mention much more than that, so that was interesting because I thought, okay, let's try to pick up from there. Okay, he mentioned this, like Srinam, today we'll be speaking about that, accessing the realm of prayer. So Srinam is not in itself a prayer, because generally prayer, again, Srinam is vocative. So vocative, remember, means you are mentioning the name of someone. It's not that even you are speaking to that person, calling like another person, oh, Krishna, come, but you're saying, Krishna, he's there, as we already mentioned. That's vocative. That dative means more like when you sing, Gopal mantra or this mantra we have received, Kling Gauraya, Krishnaya, means to Gaur, to Krishna. No? I offer my pranam to Krishna. But do you see the difference? Yeah. Bhakti means Krishna. And you don't even have to say Krishna. Like Krishna, oh, it's there. And deity means I offer my obeisances to Krishna, who is an ocean of mercy and he's the beloved Sri Ra. It's like Krishna seems to be somewhere else, if you will, in that. He's there, but it's another way of expressing that. So many times prayers sometimes are more like that. Of course, there are different types of prayers. There are prayers that you can address Krishna directly, which is some form of conversation also. But the point is, generally, the name is not generally described as a prayer. And because a prayer has some elaboration, some content, sometimes request or some expression. But the names of Krishna are the names of Krishna. But, again, they can be invoked with a certain prayerful spirit. No? So that's what's that? Well, we will try to delve into that today. From that side, we will address today the idea of prayer. Trying to cover some of the bases that our Guru Maharaj left vacant for us in service. So again, and when beginning to say what's prayer, because I know that it may sound a little bit like, what's prayer? It may sound even abstract or obscure, entering that realm. And it means as we all say, to enter in certain unknown areas, not to go, as we always say, outside comfort zone. But the point is that I want to begin with is to say that. Again, prayer is not so much a specific activity as it is a lifestyle, a state of consciousness that will accompany every activity. Of course, sometimes that begins with making that an activity. No? Like, okay, now I will pray. No? I'll sit and pray. But of course it is, hopefully when you wake up, you continue praying. Hopefully your sitting in prayer makes you continue your daily life in that spirit, although externally you are not officially, if you want to put it like that, praying, the spirit of prayer is there. You follow my point? Because you can be externally praying, but the spirit is not there. And you may be doing some cooking or having a shower in the spirit of prayer. So I would like to make that point to begin with. Now, prayer is not only something you do specifically in one particular form, but ideally, all that prayer can be is, again, a state of consciousness that will accompany every other of our devotional practices and daily lifetime. It's a spirit to enter in, not so much a thing to do, if you want to put it like that. It's a spirit, a state that we are to enter in, to inhabit, and hopefully remain there. Not so much, okay, now we'll pray. Pray is over. Prayer is over now. So what's next then? So again, prayer is not so much a thing to do, stuff to do, that has a beginning and an end, but something that has the potential to become our companion, eternal, constant, permanent companion. In one sense, we are to become that, no? Once this idea came. No? Like, there's people who, whatever, writes, if someone writes, that person becomes a writer. No? If someone, whatever, plays, that person becomes a player. If someone, what else, sings, the person becomes a, and if someone prays, the person becomes a prayer. Oops. Oops. That's how much you can imbibe prayer in your life. You become that. Interesting play of words, right? The one who prays becomes a prayer. If you don't become a prayer, how much you are praying? That's the question. Prayer is such an activity, again, if you want to put like, that you can only engage in that if you become that. And for that is, in that sense, it's not an activity, but it's your own self expressing in its best possible version, if you will. The best side of ourselves is the praying one. The prayer one. We are that. Again, it's not an activity that I do. It's what I become, all that I can be. So it's more in terms, again, not of something to do, but someone to become. So someone who prays becomes a prayer. We want to become prayer. So that's an interesting... Who are you, prayer? I mean, we won't be proud enough to say, I'm prayer, really. I hope to be prayer someday, to become it. So again, it has more to do with the sentiment, with a certain feeling, attitude, in connection with God, that will be there. Even if there are no words, no? That's the point. No? If the feeling that one experiments in proper connection with God is there, even if there are no words articulating that, that's in itself a prayer. That's prayer. If you are feeling, if you are fine-tuned with divinity, that's prayer. You are prayer in that moment. You follow. But if you are externally kneeling on the hands like this and pronouncing something that you memorized, but you are not in tune, that's not prayer. You follow. Sometimes there is this saying that says, in prayer it's better to have a heart without words than to have words without heart. You may have a heart and there are no words to put, you are not maybe able to put in words what's going on inside. That happens a lot to great personalities. They don't know what to do, what to say. Like Gurmash likes to to quote this song that says something like, I would like to tell you I love you, but words get in the way. I never heard the song, but it's a good idea. No? And so I would like to say something. I mean, I'm feeling something, but when I try to put that in words, I feel like, Of course, we use words nonetheless, ikshate nashabdat. We have to try to say something as much as we can. But the point is that in prayer, sometimes we'll have a heart, have experience without words. But better that than to have words without heart. That's pretty easy, cheap one. So the last one, words without heart, that cannot be considered prayer, technically speaking. But if heart is in the right place, that's prayer. That's prayer, and you are, again, prayer. So prayer, we can describe it, of course, also as an art, if you want to take that stance. Like an art, every art is something, it's not that you accomplish, become accomplished in that in day one. And the more you get accomplished in an art, you realize, I'm not getting any accomplished here. There's no end to this. There's no perfection, the ultimate perfection, final, to attain. There's always more and more. That's what happens if you speak, I don't know, to any accomplished artist, musician, whatever, no? Painter. They're in the highest degree of development, and you will interview them, and they will tell, I'm just starting to realize what's this about. I mean, just having a glimpse of the unlimited realm of possibilities, the unending space for progress, overwhelming, bimohan lila. So prayer is the same. If it's an art, and this we could say this is the art of arts, if you want to put it in a way beyond all everything else. So, of course, if you want to pray, you have to learn to pray. And of course, in the very attempt of learning to pray and trying to pray, you are praying, basically. No, it's important to understand this. It's not that, what's prayer? No, tell me how to pray, so I pray. Okay, now I'm doing it paka, nicely. I'm praying now. No, it's not so much like this. No, I don't know how to do this. You tell me, now I know, now I do, I'm praying. End of the story. It's not like that. No? It begins in the very beginning when you don't have a clue what's that, and you're a mess. That's already prayer. No? And it has no end. Even when we are totally accomplished, it's not a, now I'm a PhD in prayer. There's no PhD in prayer, sorry. No? So there are levels of prayer, for sure, as you may imagine. So you have to begin wherever you are, and what remains is just to keep becoming more and more accomplished, but understand there is no end to that. And that shouldn't be a problem, again. Because if not, it's more, we are attached to get a prize for our ego. I became perfect in this. But love is such nature that it will keep you always humble, so that you never can claim, I already captured that totally. It never happens. The more you advance, the more humble you have to become for advancing to the next stage and the next stage. That's why Sanatana Goswami said, between prem and humility, basically there is no difference. One is synonymous with the other. The more you advance in love, the more humility is there. The more humility is there, the more love, place for love is there. The more love is there, the more humility is there. And the two of them are nourishing each other, like acting like cause and effect of each other ad infinitum. So basically, in the art of prayer, that's what remains, to keep perfectioning that through constant practice. And practice eventually becomes perfection, and perfection becomes sadhana, becomes sadhya, the practice becomes the goal in itself. And our goal, as we know, is ongoing. You can always love Krishna more. He can always love more, and so on. There is one interesting quote. There is one nice book. Someone may like to read this. From The Art of Prayer. Basically, that's the name. Since we are speaking of prayer as an art. From a Christian, like, how to say in English? Recluse. He was called Theophan. I don't know how to say in English. In Spanish, it's Teófano. In English, maybe Theophan or Theophanus. The recluse. Don't be scared by him. He's a nice person. He's a recluse. But don't be afraid of that dark hole he is in. So he will say like that. He will say, never dare to consider a spiritual act ever finished. He will say. And this is particularly true in connection to prayer. So you never consider yourself, I'm fully accomplished in whatever this anga of bhakti, this aspect of my... Don't dare to limit bhakti, love, spirituality to that. And specifically, this can be applied, this criterion can be applied to prayer. And he concludes saying that the learning, or the accomplished learning in prayer, can be considered concluded, and he puts quotation mark, concluded, when in your prayer, the only thing you do is to go from one feeling to another. Then you became accomplished in prayer. But again, you continue moving from one place to another. And that moving, it means higher degrees of... So that's the potential of prayer. Again, it's not just like a boring thing, scary, mechanical, or duty-bound. Okay, I have to sit and recite this daily prayer. Okay, now's the time. Gayatri three times a day. Everything can become mechanical, robotical, but that's the moment where you have to be the less robotical. But it's paradoxical, because if you lose sight of what that means, that thing, or that those moments in which you can be the most yourself, you end up being the most cyborg-like person of the day. So it's delicate. No? The thing that has the potential to make you the more organic, natural, spontaneous personality, if improperly addressed, makes you a robot, basically. And you do everything like Niyamagraha, as Rupa Goswami will say. To do things without understanding their purpose. So how to define prayer? I mean, we said something, we will try to say something else. Sometimes prayer is defined like the state of presenting ourselves before God. No? Of course, it may begin in some official moment I'm presenting before God. At one point you realize he's everywhere, so I can't remain always in that state. No, but we will say, being aware of I'm in front of him. Again, in theory we know he's everywhere, he's always, but in the day, like in the daily dynamics, we may just become aware of, oh, Dorje Gopal, oh, no, Gurudev, oh, no, the rest of the day, like, we may not conduct as if they are there, right, with us in our hearts. So, to begin where we could say prayers, that state or that moment of awareness, I'm presenting in front of, as we said the other day, where I am. Not to become aware where I am, how to approach him. He's already there, where I am. He's there, where I am. I'm there. To be honest, again, we could summarize in the word honesty, which basically honesty means to be concerned with one's thing, and it's to be fit in the presence of God, if you want to put it like that. Now, how I can become fit to become fit, and not fit in the sense of deserve it, but what do I have to do to be present, to become aware of their presence, Sri Guru, Vaishnavas, Sri Hari. How to become fit, how to know what to do in their presence, how to properly honor their coming to my life. Again, I'm not deserving that. That's the principle of causeless grace. This is something that the ways go away, go beyond whatever we could do to deserve it. But mercy is coming, and I'm to be, in Sanskrit the term is kripa patra. Kripa patra. Patra means like container, and kripa means mercy. So we are mercy containers. Now, mercy is coming, the content, mercy is flowing from Srinam and so on. And we are the containers, so we have to do something as containers. No? I have to contain that. It doesn't mean I deserve it, but if I'm giving you something, but I don't deserve it, but you need it, yes. Here you have it. Where should I put it? Huh? Here. But how is the container going on? No? Sri Gaur Govinda Swami will say, well, if there are holes in your heart and I pour all this nectar, oh, so nice, but after a minute, phew, there's nothing. No? So he will speak as an arthas, if you will, or some of the things like the holes in our heart. So the mercy is coming, keeps coming, we cannot deny, but keeps going, living, because there are so many holes. We are not able to contain what is coming. So sadhana will be a way of saying to fix the kripa patra, to fix the container, to fill the holes properly. So whenever the mercy is coming, we are able to catch it, we are able to receive it, to honor it. It's not just like escaping our between our fingers and we cannot get anything. We have a taste of that when it comes. Oh, so nice that. So we keep praying, feel again, and it's empty, feeling empty. So you follow my point. So the goal of practice is not just pray for mercy, but fix the container. And if you fix the container, one drop of mercy will be enough, probably, if you will. We will overflow the container. Because the type of mercy that is coming is, it's not that we need quantity in one sense. Quality is such, one drop of that is enough. But if there are holes, even oceans of that will keep flowing and leaving us. So like a way to illustrate, no, the situation of being honest and what do I have to do to be fit in the presence of God. How do I feel fixed, my kripa patra, no, the mercy container of my heart. Honesty. That has to do with honesty, basically. What do I have to do to fix those holes? Interesting, the word honesty, the original one and the etymology is honest. And honest means be one. And be one means basically be the one you are supposed to be. No, be yourself. No. And of course, you can use the quote in a cheap way, be yourself. No, sometimes we just say be yourself, but we don't have a clue who we are. So sometimes I tell you, be yourself, I may be throwing you into a greater crisis. Because first you need to know who I am. If I tell you, be yourself, yes. Or sometimes one person told me, what do you think about the idea of slogan, love yourself? Well, first of all, you have to have a clue what does love mean and what yourself word means. Because if you don't have a clue what does mean yourself, what love means, in the name of loving yourself, you will make a mess, a disaster. You will become selfish, exploitative, totally destructive, whatever. So many things in the name of love yourself. But if you understand what's love and who you are, that's another thing. So, and of course, when we say here honesty, honest, be you, of course, there are so many degrees of discovering who we are and all that we can be. No? Because we have an idea of ourselves at present, which generally is not the most broad and deep, and that's why we are not so happy in life, generally. So we need to discover who we actually are, beyond who we think we are, and that has to do with what we are and all that we can be. There's a potential accompanying us. Of course, all that I can be, I may discover that in time and eternity. But what's all that I can be today to begin with? Now, let's be realistic. I'm here today. Let's go to the present. Because future can become an evasive mechanism. All that I can be, all that I can be, all that I can be. And you are just in a dreamland about your most brilliant thing, but just thinking, not doing anything in the present for that to happen in the future. So when we say be honest, means be one, be you, be all that you can be today. Tomorrow we'll speak again tomorrow. Let's take today. That's the only thing you have. And that will foster all that you can be tomorrow, the next week, and in eternity. But it all begins August 17th, 2022. We have to begin somewhere. Again, you have to be realistic. That means to be honest. Because if not, you keep pushing past, future, evading, evasive to the present. That's now. Be yourself, as we use this Jungian term, individuation. Become an individual as much as you can today. Get as closer as possibly to what you can be today, the best possible version of yourself now. Not even later today, now. Today in the afternoon is another day. It's another chapter. It's another potential to discover. Now, 10:14, 20 seconds. Because if not, we keep pushing, not the thing. Like, hey, we are to do this thing, guys. And you'll say, someday, Maharaj. Someday I'll do it. But why someday cannot be today? Why someday always is tomorrow? And never tomorrow either. Well, we create this someday. Today can be some of those days. Why not someday is today? No, someday has to be necessarily tomorrow. And tomorrow, of course, I will say the same thing. And so on. As they say in Latin, ad nauseam. No? How do you say it? Till it becomes now. How do you say in English? Nauseabond? Nauseous. What is the word?
Nauseous.
Let me check. Nothing. Till it becomes nauseating. Nauseating. Ad nauseam. Someday. Bibatsa. <That's. laughs> So individuation now. There you have another motto for the retreat. Individuation now. Get your product now. Because ultimately, what we are, ultimately, again, we are speaking of what we are, and all this in the context of prayer and becoming ourselves, presenting as ourselves, we are nothing but the unique relationship with Bhagavan, ultimately. All that we can be, ultimately, is the personification of a unique, irrepeatable, you have that word in English? No? That you cannot repeat.
Irreplaceable.
Unique relationship with God. It won't be the same in any different case. It will be always different. As we say the other day, they are unlimited Mahaprabhus and Krishnas because each one is there to reciprocate to a very unique devotee. But again, ourselves can individuate in the present or not at all. If you don't strive to become all that you can be now, that's not happening in any other moment. Again, remember, whatever takes place, experience takes place in the present, realization takes place in the present, not in the past, not in the future. So be careful where your mind is. Try to, you can make a percentage per day. How much in my daily life, in my day I live in the present, how much do I live in the past, how much do I live in the future? And understand that all the things that we need to improve, to transform, to receive, that will happen in the present. So prayer means to be there in the present. Be you there now. Be here now, they say. Be here now. Famous quote from the 60s. So again, of course, with this, when we speak about this side of prayer as a state, as a presentation of ourselves, again, we are not totally at all downplaying the power, as my guru said the other day, the power of prayers of our acharyas. No, the prayers composed by Narottam Das Thakur, by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I mean, so much they themselves are invested there, and they are our role models. We want to follow in their footsteps, to attain their love, if you will, in one way. Not exactly their love, because we are not them, but that serves to us as a very important perimeter. No, it gives so much context and parameters, and it's important. Even in complement to the chanting, we are speaking about chanting the name of Krishna here. But sometimes it helps a lot to chant the song, to sing the songs of our acharyas, to draw, to extract the real aptitude through which we are to sing the Maha Mantra. Some sadhus even say, to go to the point to say, if you only chant Hare Krishna, the result will be nothing. To make a point. And they will say then, you should also sing the bhajans and the kirtans composed by our acharyas to imbibe the mood through which to chant Srinam. Because if not, that can, and again, in a mechanical thing and in like abstract, generic repetition. But where is, again, the heart there? So those prayers are there by our acharyas. And we have not only to invoke them, repeat them, but to own them, if you will. You have to also recite them and chant them, not trying to be Bhaktivinoda Thakur, not trying to be Narottam. How much that will work? I mean, I'm not close to that. So how those things that they are saying apply to me in my situation now? How I make, again, remain an individual and relate to those things as who I am, as all that I can be today? In that sense, owning those prayers, not publishing a song book with those songs and putting your name. I composed this song. That's not mean owning those prayers. No? So again, in an initial stage, with generally we don't have too much clue about where to go, how to pray, who I am, what's this. Okay. Those prayers come. It's very crucial, giving us parameter, context, aspiration, so many things. But again, in time, it's good also that we learn to make our own prayers. And it begins by, again, owning the prayers of others, if you will, and including in our own heart. And that creates a new way of saying those same things, if you will, in your own words. You will write your own prayers. You will write your own songs. We have tried a little bit in some of our homeworks here as well, no? To promote that individual inside of you, individuation. Write a prayer. No, not necessarily find one that fits what we are speaking and do copy-paste, but try to see what comes from your heart. So individuation, again, that's an interesting word. Because if not, if we only repeat, recite praise, recite, how do they say in English? Recite thanks. They have like a way, okay, thank you God for this, or praise God for that. I'm not criticizing that, but the point is that can become a pious custom only. And that will be some form of, I mean, you are not really passionately investing yourself there. That ends up being more like a pious custom, and that can take into a hollow superstition or not prayer. That's the point. And that will be more dishonesty. That honor, the honesty we are speaking about. You end up using those devices, if you will, in a what's the adjective for superstition?
Superstitious.
Superstitious ways, empty way, all hollow way. So externally, it seems you are honoring, praising. No, it's a show of appreciation while you are concealing indifference. So that's a form of dishonesty. That can take place in the name of prayer. If prayers become sound like, again, official thing that you are to do in a certain way. Okay, I'm doing that. You can't tell, nobody can tell me anything. I'm chanting my rounds. I'm praying as I'm supposed to. But heart has to be there. You have to be there. If not, again, as we mentioned the other day, that's a form of sahaja. Remember the idea that we mentioned of sahaja? Sahaja is not only to, as Srila Samaras will say, fools rush where angels fear to tread. That's one variety. But the other variety is, I'm not willing to change, but even externally I make a show that I'm in the right place. No? Like showing apparent appreciation for an exalted ideal, but actually neglecting to take the adequate means to attain it. And I'm not there. No? I show appreciation for something I'm not there, as if I'm there. Or I acknowledge I'm not there, but I'm not taking the necessary means to be there. But despite that, they say, oh, this is so beautiful, so great, so incredible. And again, the echo will return and ask you, oh, what you are doing to reach, to do, are you doing the nest? Again, it's not to get neurotic. Akshay, don't get neurotic. Mm-hmm. To get discouraged, to get depressed. Try to keep the middle point in mind. Mm-hmm. But not to be complacent either. Because there's so much tendency to do that. We have to be honest. Many of us, at least in my case, that tendency is there. Lifetimes have lifetimes of complacency. So we don't have to take that lag that I just play a button and I'm transcending complacency. That's pretty much calcified in our DNA, in our psyche. Mm-hmm. So if we show apparent appreciation for something, but we are neglecting to take the necessary means to achieve it, actually, that's showing our hidden indifference to that. Mm-hmm. A cheap regard for the higher thing. That's a commitment. Again, I don't want to scare any of you. But in a spiritual lineage, and we will feel in our own, we are receiving the topmost, highest, most valuable jewel. Okay, so there's a price to pay for that. I mean, that is costless. I always like to say costless mercy doesn't mean priceless mercy. You have to do something also. You have to do your part. I would like to say you're 50%. You're 50%. I'm not asking you to do 108%. Just your part. And we may think, oh, but it sounds so much, Maharaj. And still, you are just now speaking 47 minutes, and I know this will continue like for one more hour. I don't know what to do with this. Can we stop the class here? Can you cancel the whole thing here? Can we stop the retreat now? No. No. Today's class will maybe be longer than ever. So we need to find some taste in that. No, there's nobody's attacking us. Nobody's telling us you are useless. Nobody's pointing to us with blame or guilt. We are just being told what needs to be done. And if we are doing that, okay, then no need to get tortured. And you realize, I'm not doing that, then feel happy that someone is telling you. But if you get depressed, it means that you don't want to do that. And that means you're a hypocrite. And maybe hypocrisy is being highlighted. And you're like, oh my gosh, I'm starting to see my duplicitous side. But you are honest on some level, you will celebrate even that. Because, okay, at least I can know that I'm not being honest. And if you recognize that, that's a level of honesty. No? But there, you can always find some point to begin where you are. No? Like if someone tells me, Maharaj, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, but I'm not feeling anything. So I tell you, well, at least you feel that you don't feel anything. So you are feeling something. Begin from there. Follow. There's always, you have to be skillful about, okay, where I am and how to begin from there. So we have to understand, no, in conditioned state, when we are Bhada Jiva, when we are not a fully enlightened personality, of course it's easier to philosophize, you say, than to pray and to watch out for yourself. That's not so easy, as we said the other day. I can tell you, I mean, I'm sitting on this type of big fancy seats many times per day, opening my mouth for hours, and it's easy to do that. I don't have a problem. I can open, you know me, I can speak for 10 hours, and it's not a problem. That doesn't speak who I am. I can just make a performance here. But when I wake up from this fancy seat and I go to my cabin and no, none of you is here, no audience, no applause, no spotlight, no streaming, and I'm there with myself, hopefully for the most part of my day, then Krishna will say, now let's see how much you believe yourself, all the fancy things you say in the morning class today. Let's see how much. You follow my point. So it's easier, especially as conditioned souls, to philosophize and tell others what to do than to pray and watch out for ourselves. The exterior attitude, again, in the context of a conditioned soul, exterior attitude is by nature easier. To be superficial, to be external, is more attractive. As a conditioned soul, we are more attracted to the external things because they seem easier. Oh, it's easier. I'm attracted to that. That's the symptom of being conditioned. But to have interior attitude, to speak all these weird things that Maharaj Padmanabha is saying about prayer and all this stuff, oh, that's difficult. It's painful. Oh, it's boring. Oh, I want to escape from it. I don't want to look in that direction. I want to think about that. So the question is, why? Because actually, to pray is not difficult. That should be the most natural expression of our being. So if it's so terribly torturing and difficult, that means how difficult I am. In which predicament I find myself, how complex I am. It's not that prayer is the simplest thing you can ever thought in. But for us it's very difficult to be simple. We have to integrate so much complexity first. So as conditioned soul, we run towards the easy thing, the cheap thing, the external thing. But when someone starts to speak in terms of internal things and all this other stuff, oh, it's difficult. And since it's difficult, I get discouraged. And we get discouraged when something is difficult. But we shouldn't get discouraged. If something is impossible, that's another thing. If I ask you, please, Akshay, lift these three trees on your fingertip. And of course you will tell Maharaj, I'm not Govardhan Dhari, I'm not Krishna lifting in Govardhan. So you will, and you say, try it. I mean, I won't do that, I'm not that monster. But it's impossible. So you get discouraged, you will get traumatized. But if I'm asking you something, maybe easy, it's like, oh, that's easy. Just bring one blade of grass. Oh. Maharaj is pleased, it's such an easy way. But that's boring. I mean, that's superficial. You are not being challenged to grow, to change. So you need the middle point. It's like what we say, between impossible and easy, which is difficult. So middle point is difficult. It's not easy. It's not impossible. So middle point should not discourage us. It should give us full enthusiasm. Understanding, okay, yeah, to have an inner life is difficult. But which other life is there? If I try to have an external life, you can try as many lifetimes as you can, but you will never feel it's happening. And you have tried, we have tried a lot, and we keep trying, we still have some hope. Till now in the whole history of humanity, there's not one single case in which they claim, I became totally satisfied by leading external life. But somehow we feel it will work in my case. So still we are investing some hope in that direction, no? Oh, there's not one single reference point in this history to tell you, look at, there's something else that you keep trying, you will do it, you yourself with the exception to the rule in the whole creation. It's like, I don't think so, it sounds a little bit weird. Better, there are so many cases of saintly and enlightened people who try inner life and it was difficult but it worked. So I think that's the way. The way is not easy. Who say that? No, don't cheat yourself. So, the real victory, the real triumph, what's the word in English? Triumph is always interior. It's never exterior. You can never be victorious externally. So it's try to understand that. No, the real triumph is always inner, internal. It's not exterior. Don't try to be successful or victorious being superficial. Many people may seem to appreciate that and say, oh, you are so victorious, but that's not real victory. So prayer is a process, prayer is an art, prayer is, as a friend of mine puts it, it's like alchemy. Alchemy?
Yes.
This alchemical process? Whatever, alchemy. Let's keep it in alchemy. No, it is a long process. No, alchemy, if you want to transform one substance into another, it's not like, okay, let's make it as quick as possible. No. You have to be willing to wait, and to extract the ultimate potential of a particular substance. Its purest intrinsic potential has to be subjected into a sequence of distinct stages, put into the fire, take it out, put it in again, take it out. Will become taken out, will develop more strength to deal with the fire, go back to the fire, multiple complete repetitions of that, which may seem so many times the same thing, but it's not always the same thing. Every time it's happening, something new is happening. The fire seems to be the same, but it's not the same, and you're not the same. And finally, refining, distilling the product to its finest purity. And the fire is always there, no? So we always invoke this idea of fire, the fire of prayer, the fire of surrender, the fire of, no? We're not able to jump into the fire and reside in the fire forever yet. We are not far, like we may get, oh, I got burned. So in the beginning we're closer to the fire. Oh, it's warm, it's nice. Oh, some nice light. You get a little closer. Oh, it's too hot. Oh, it's burning. Ah. But gradually, getting closer and closer, you become more accustomed, and eventually you can enter my Gurus like to say, the planet Sun, and develop an identity there and live eternally in the Sun. Like implying, you can become Sun-like, far-like, prayer-like. You can become prayer. Again, you are to become a prayer. I want to quote from Thomas Merton. I have to quote something from Thomas Merton, speaking on prayer, so with your permission here. And interestingly, just for you to know, I got to know Thomas Merton through my Guru Maharaj, because I was reading one article of him in one website called Huffington Post. And he has some articles there. And there's like some brief, bio or definition, who is here? He's the Thomas Merton of devotional Vedanta or something like that. So I was like, oh, I like this person so much. So if he's the Thomas Merton of this, I must like Thomas Merton for sure. If he's the Thomas, I like him. So then I went to Thomas Merton. Oh, I like Thomas Merton. So, Thomas Merton is a very interesting figure, very Christian mystic. He wrote many books, most of them, on prayer, solitude, contemplation, silence, all these type of things. While also, interestingly, he was involved in many of the contemporary situations in the world, like Vietnam War at those times, while never leaving almost his hermitage. No, so it's interesting. There was no Wi-Fi, remember, at that time. There was a time when there was no internet. And he will not travel the world. He will never almost leave the hermitage. But from his place of prayer, he had such a universal connection, if you will, and access to reality, that he was able to give very brilliant insights of whatever was happening outside of the hermitage from that specific spot. So regarding prayer, he says many things. I'm just quoting one, with your permission. He says, and we mentioned something of that already, but it's never enough to repeat these ideas. It is God first who calls us to pray. Therefore, prayer is a reply to His call. Success in prayer, it's not to find God, but to realize that we cannot find Him unless He chooses to reveal Himself to us. And therefore, one must pray with that spirit. That's the best way to look for and to find God in prayer. So that's again a very Gaudiya point. There are many verses in Shastra, Jami Bhaisat, Brinyate, Tatlabhya, and so on, which says, unless He wants to show Himself to you, you cannot see Him. The door is closed, Sila Samaras will say, the door, knocking on heaven's door, there's one song. So you go to heaven, why you will knock? Because the door is closed. If the door is open, you will not have to knock. You just enter. But in Shastra, the Vaikuntha describes even as seven gates. It's not even one door, but there are one, two different layers of access. So you have to knock on the door. But Srila Samaras will say, you have to knock. Why? Because door is closed and he has the key. You don't have the key. Your key is knocking. That's your key. That's what you can do. You should do. But he has the key from inside. So he can open the door from you. You can open the door from the outside without key. Don't turn, take the door down or anything. I mean, you have the only thing you can do is like, or depends how you knock. They will open the door quicker or not. No? So if you're just like once per month, they won't even notice the knocking. Someone say, someone knocked for a month. No, it was just the wind or something. No. Once per week, like, no, this might be some drop of water falling every time here and there. But if you're like, you take a horn and conch shell and call with us. Again, it's not about volume, but it's volume of your heart. Oh, it seems someone is urgently asking to open the door. Let's go. No prayers. Thomas Merton makes this nice point here. No? He's calling you to... He takes the first step. He takes the initiative. That's why you are praying. That's what you are trying to pray. Not because you have your own initiative from time immemorial. No, he's taking the throw on the rope. So you are praying. It's in reply to his call. It's not that he's not doing anything. He already did something and that's why you are trying what you are trying. But he will say, again, that's an important point. Success in prayer is not finding God. In the sense of, don't be extremely attached. Where is God? I'm not seeing. I'm not looking. But to realize you cannot find him unless he chooses to reveal himself to you. So that, of course, takes you to humility. Not to this situation where I'm not in control. I cannot determine what will happen according to my own sweet will, which is not relative. Generally, it's bittersweet or... at least, no? So try to find and look and find God entering to that spirit. No? Unless you want to reveal yourself to me, the only thing I can do is knocking in a better way. Have that humility. If you don't have humility in prayer, how much you are praying? I won't enter into the third verse of Sikshastagan. That requires a whole different retreat. But that's very crucial verse, as you know. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, unless you chant the name with this, following this verse, there's no way of attaining Prem. He said, Trinadapi Sunichi, Natarodapi, I have to mention at least briefly. Natarodapi Sehishnu, Namani Nama, Nadina Kirtaniya Sadar. Be humbler than the blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. Offer respects to all, and do not expect respect for yourself. In that way, you will be able to chant Hari constantly. And this verse starts with humility. Be humble, and be very humble, not just humble. Very humble, with capital H-U-M-B-L-E. Humble. No? Because if you don't pray with humility, I mean, if you say, I will pray with false ego, that's an oxymoron. No? False ego cannot pray. So, therefore, if false ego cannot pray, in prayer there cannot be false ego. If there is false ego, there is no prayer. One automatically cancels the other. Follow the point? If false ego cannot pray, try to pray with false ego. That's not prayer. You may think you are praying or whatever, but real prayer, there is no false ego. You have to enter humility. You have to enter that place. And then prayer will work. Again, Kirtaniya Sadahari, this verse is saying. Kirtaniya Sadahari indicates constancy, you say?
Consistency.
Consistency. Like continuously engage in something. Remember, we say prayer is a state. It's not just one thing to do here and there. So to always keep ourselves praying, again, it's not a practice, it's a state of consciousness, Kirtaniya Sadahari. You have to enter this spirit. You have to develop a taste for prayer, which means for humility, which allows prayer. No? We have to develop a taste for that which allows prayer to happen. You follow? No? Which allows prayer to happen, as we mentioned? Humility. So that means you have to better develop taste for humility. If you don't like humility, you don't like prayer, basically. Because you cannot have one without the other. And the idea for us is to become addicted to the name, which implies become addicted to humility. And that you, there you can replace all the other addictions you may have. So, to the opposite, to the antithesis of all those things. So you have to develop taste for chanting. Remember, a symptom of good japa, of good prayer, is that you have a taste in chanting. And a symptom of bad japa, you tell me. It's lack of taste, and you're struggling to complete the whole thing. No? You're, okay, I have to finish. And look in the watch, look in the counting, and praying to finish as soon as possible. No? Imagine which is the message you are sending to Radha and Krishna by chanting in that way. No? I need to finish this as soon as possible. Does it sound like a project to eternal loving relationship in transcendence? It's the exact opposite, 180 degrees on the other extreme. So be careful, because we can end doing that embarrassing thing. So if you sing chants thinking, I have to do it, instead of I want to do it, you are sending again a message to Namprabhu. You are sending a telegram. I don't like to spend time with you. No, I don't like to spend time with you. I have to. What to do? I committed with my guru. I promised this. They are expecting that. I'm supposed to. But actually, I don't like. As soon as I can finish this issue, the better for me. That's the message you are sending. Although your tongue is saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna is not hearing Hare Krishna. Here is Krishna's Bhavagrahi Janardana. He's saying, what's in your heart? I don't like to spend time with you. Hare Krishna. Hey Krishna, you're calling Krishna to tell him, I don't like to spend time with you. That's not prayer. That's not chanting. That's, as we say, counting as best. Now, sometimes we are counting, but not chanting. But we shouldn't count. Or if you want to speak about count, my Guru Maharaj gives that example sometimes. No? One should count the mala, the rosary, with the same attention that a greedy person is counting their money. Oh, $100, $200. No? Of course, it's a way of putting that. No? It's not to make it. But with that greediness, this spirit chanting with this absorption and this divine greediness. Like if a material person is counting money, but sometimes we're counting the beats and thinking about money. I'm counting money in our minds. But don't forget, chanting is not anything of that. It's chanting is seva. Remember, chanting japa is prayer, is service. Remember this word service. As prayer is not just one specific activity, service is not one specific activity. It is a state of mind. It's an attitude to deal with life. So service, we could say, is to keep myself in a state of prayer. That's service. Oh, someone say, you are not doing any service. No. Do some stuff. But if you are saying that to a saintly person who lives in a state of prayer, well, watch out for the consequence of that. If you're living genuinely, of course, this not to abuse, but if you are there, if someone is a living prayer, is a person who is a living prayer, that person is performing highest service to humanity at every single moment. Although externally, there may be just like sitting. No? Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, he was Bhajan Anandi. He was sitting all day, basically. Externally doing nothing, apparently. But internally, he was absorbed. The highest form of prayer and service. Although externally, he's not doing service. He's not preaching. He's not collecting money. He's not opening temples. He's not having big following. So, Where does it say in Shastra that that's the symptom of being advanced or something? So the point is that, again, our devotion, our active work that we all perform for sure, becomes service as much as it's based on a life of prayer, we could say. Prayer gives the devotional service quality to our actions. Because if not, that may be karma also. Some action that I'm attached to the results and I'm like doing from a calculative perspective. But prayer gives the vision, prayer gives the quality. So whatever you do, technically actually becomes devotional service. So it's not that prayer is qualifying us for a greater work. No. Okay, I will pray, so then I get strength from the prayer, and then I can. And you feel the lines with that. Prayer is the greater work in itself. So again, and this is real service. No, we always speak about Nam Seva. No, chanting is rendering service to Bhagavan, entering a spirit of prayer to align ourselves to that reality, to know what to offer, how to offer. And again, the principle of chanting, we could say, is to increase the pleasure of the name. Here we are sharing some perspectives, but all of these are tied together. No? The main principle of chanting is how I can give pleasure to the name. Seva means that. Seva means to give pleasure. It's not just service. What does it mean, service? Because, again, where our mind goes when we say service? Military service, maybe? Social service? This service, that service? But for us, seva means devotional service. And devotional service means to be concerned with increasing the pleasure of the object of our affection. And that person is Nam. So it's important to develop this service attitude. Great personalities like Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, sometimes he emphasized more service above chanting. But not because chanting is not important, but because you want to make the point, you have to have the proper service attitude, no? For when the time of chanting comes. No? So there are different ways of making the same point. No? Chanting is service. Conceive that as service, but sometimes try to develop a service attitude. So when you chant, you don't address the name in exploitative terms. You have to have a disposition of service. There's this famous situation of one devotee who went to Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta and said, "Guru Maharaj, I don't feel anything when chanting. Nothing." And he said, "Oh, great. Continue chanting." Like implying, who said that you have to feel something? Who said that chanting is about you feeling things? Chanting is about you making them feel something. No, give pleasure to Nam. Give Krishna something. Offer yourself so he can feel something. It's not about, hey, make me feel something. That's the same take that we use in this world. No, more in this world, I'm trying to use things and people to make us feel something. But he replied that, well, I'm not feeling anything. I say, great. Almost he congratulated him. Oh, great. You are doing fine, continue chanting. And they were just like, what do you mean? So he explained his idea. We are not just chanting to feel stuff, to use the name so he can make us, increase my dopamine or whatever. No? Whole name is not a Red Bull or something. To put it in gross contemporary terms. No? Don't take Harinam as Red Bull. No, it's not just like these beverages, like you are like, okay, now I'm activated, I feel something. So again, we are not trying to use the name, we are not trying to manipulate God for our purposes. The real attitude while praying is more like Kierkegaard said that once, interestingly, Soren Kierkegaard, he said the function of prayer is not to influence God, but actually to modify the nature of he who prays. No? At least to begin with. No, it's not so much I'm trying to change, influence God so he does my bidding. Bidding, you say? That's not the purpose of prayer. And many people, when they think of prayer, that's what they think. Mm-hmm. Prayer is, God, I need this, give me that. Trying to influence Him. Have pity on me, look at me, send what I need. No? You have some Amazon Prime service there, send what I need as quick as possible. You're trying to put Him in your service. It's a form of manipulation. But actually, prayer is about, as he said, modify the nature of he or she who is praying. It's not modifying him, but how do I change again? Not where are you, but where I am, and where I should be. So that's idea. In prayer, we shouldn't doubt God. Again, we shouldn't try to manipulate Him. We shouldn't try to even think that He's not responding and He's failing and I have to influence Him so He does what He actually should be doing. You follow? Because if you try to influence God, you are basically saying, I mean, I don't trust you. You are doing your job. I know better than you what you should be doing. So you should be sending me this and this should be happening. And that's what I call prayer. No. Thank you. Please. No? So when we go, if we go to God, well, we can go with a lot of doubts, but not about Himself, but about ourselves in that case. No? I'm not sure who I am. I'm not sure I'm authentic enough. I have doubts about my authenticity. I don't want to take for granted my authenticity. I don't want to go to God. I'm totally authentic. I cannot be more authentic, God. You know that. And He will like, ooh. No? So if there are doubts, they're not about His authenticity, but mine. And again, not in the neurotic level, but just being open to change and recognize what can be improved. See it from those sides. Not what can be improved, not what's wrong, but what can be improved. Where there is room for improvement. Now what is wrong and let's condemn that. It's not like that. So, and it's okay if I go to God with doubts about my authenticity, because probably I'm not fully authentic yet. I mean, that's not so easy to reach 108% authenticity. You are on the other side already. So, but we have to be careful about not doubting God. Again, not questioning His authenticity, but always ours. In a healthy way, but always in that direction. Because again, if not, you will transform prayer into a way of doubting God's authenticity. And in His face, telling Him basically that. Indirectly, send me this, I need this, like, but you don't know what you are doing over there. Not like this movie, which was, how do you say in English? This guy which thought, God is not doing His job, He's not doing things properly. If I would have the chance of being God for a week, I will do things better. There's one movie, Jim Carrey made one movie about that.
Bruce Almighty.
Okay, I don't know. So that's funny, no? Because and the whole movie is about what happens to the world while that guy is God for a week. Because God will say, "Okay, you want to try? No, okay, let's be empathic. Come here." And of course, in that week, the world almost goes to ruin, and everyone is dying, and all the disasters you can imagine. And the conclusion of the movie is, "No, you are doing your job, and I'll have to do mine. No, and you are doing yours well. I don't have to doubt. Sorry for the mistrust there. Next time I will doubt myself, not your authenticity." No? So you can see the movie to support that point if you want, if you need. So again, we don't have to doubt divine. We can doubt ourselves in a healthy way, as I'm mentioning, to nourish our faith. Again, in a way that faith, doubt nourishes faith. As we say the other day, which is the exact opposite of faith. Remind me. What comes immediately? If you will know what I say some days ago, what will you say? What did you say some days ago? The opposite of faith is
doubt.
And we will say no. The opposite of faith is certainty. Because doubt is there to nourish faith. So if it's to nourish faith, how can it be its opposite? But actually the opposite of faith is certainty, because certainty means I'm totally sure I know everything and I'm in the right place, I'm certain. So that doesn't allow any room for growth and progress. And faith has to do a lot with that. Faith has to do with not being so sure about yourself and asserting yourself positively, extremely, But to enter into unknown lands also. Faith has to do with dealing with the unknown, with darkness. Don't be afraid of darkness. Interestingly, even recently, scientifically speaking, now I go to science for a minute, they have proved this interesting idea that wherever there is darkness, there's always some light. I'm talking more in scientific terms, they say. No? There's not such a thing as absolute darkness. So whenever you enter darkness, there's some light there. So the point is, there's no absolute darkness, therefore there's no need to be afraid of darkness. We are afraid of absolute darkness. But if there's some light in darkness, we go for that light, no? At the end of the tunnel or whatever. So prayer has to do with darkness, if you will, exploring some unexplored directions. You know, go to the bodegas, we say the other day, you know, and clean it from tip to toe, and find some dragons coming out of the bodega. And you have to embrace the dragon, not to run from the dragon and put it below the carpet, no? Because that will shout even louder. Now, this is this famous story that there was a dragon in the house and someone didn't want to look at the dragon. And the more they were in denial of the dragon, the more the dragon was becoming bigger and the fire was bigger. But when the person decides to face at the dragon disappears. Not like implying this idea, when you choose to embrace your darkness, if you will, you realize, oh, there's light here. And that light will guide you through the whole path, and there's no absolute darkness whatsoever. So prayer has to do with this type of things. Now try to, again, work on yourself, doubt about yourself in a healthy way, not be so certain absolutely about where you are, when you are. And watch out for yourself, no? Like, be strict with yourself. Srila Prabhupada will say, strict with yourself, merciful with others. So today we are speaking about what does it mean to be strict with yourself. First, because if you are not strict with yourself, you cannot be merciful with anyone. It's a sequence there. First, strict with yourself, then merciful with others. If one is not there, the other won't be there as well. And strict, again, doesn't mean neurotic. Again, let's go to that word. But it means to watch out for yourself, to be authentic with yourself. And to carry a life of prayer means basically that. To lead a life of prayer means, for example, to contemplate truth constantly. That's not easy. That's demanding. No? But sustainable, it's possible, it's not impossible. You lead a life where you are contemplating truth internally on an ongoing basis. It's not that you contemplate truth just when you hear the class or whatever, no, once a day, but you are in that state of contemplation. And to become a contemplative, again, doesn't mean that you sit and you do nothing and you're just like, I'm a contemplative. But whatever you're doing, you are contemplating the presence of truth in whatever it may be, no? Whether it may be a snake in your room or the Bhagavatam class or whatever. You're going through the apparent event and you're seeing beyond that and finding whatever truth is there. And on a regular basis, again, not once a day, once a day, once a week, let's go to church, let's contemplate truth. But get it accustomed to that as a lifestyle. And that takes effort, that takes... In the beginning, it won't flow spontaneously. You have to determine and take yourself in that direction. I don't want to be superficial. I want to keep myself in a deeper layer of relationships and living my life. And I have to make some effort. That's what belongs to you. No? Once I read that quote, the only thing that belongs to you is effort. That's a good one. So do something with that. That's in your position. Like my Guru Maharaj likes to say, no, like make effort like if everything depends on that, while knowing that actually ultimately everything depends on God's grace. But that grace won't be perceived if you don't make maximum effort you can on your side. No? So that's this Theophanes, whatever, the recluse, he will say something similar. He said, you will never attain anything by only by your effort exclusively, But God will never give you anything if you don't work with all your strength. He say this rule doesn't know exception. There's no exception to this rule. He'll say, no, like trying. There is grace, but there is effort. So in the name of grace, don't become lazy. Basically, prayer has a lot to do with grace, as we mentioned, but has a lot to do with making our part, being contemplatives, if you want to put it like that. No, we shouldn't pray. In other words, again, I'm sorry if I keep kicking you out of the comfort zone. I already kicked you out 10 kilometers from that, and I will kick. Give me maybe a few more minutes of further kicking. Because out of the, as I will always say, it's only out of the comfort zone that we learn something. I mean, you won't learn anything out in the comfort zone. There is no real learning, no real new experience in the comfort zone. It's always the same. Actually, technically speaking, comfort zone is outside of the comfort zone. Real comfort is outside of the comfort zone. Comfort zone at one point is totally unbearable and uncomfortable. No. So we shouldn't pray for an easy life. No? We shouldn't address prayer like Krishna, make everything smooth and nice and sweet and as I will like and easy going. Of course, I'm not saying go to the other extreme and pray for suffering and torture and engage in masochist chain of prayer. I'm not saying nothing like that. But we should pray to God for give me the strength to go through whatever difficulties may come. Not send everything easy so I don't have to go through any difficulty. That's not prayer. Again, you are trying to influence God. No? Send the results according to my taste. No. Send whatever you consider is best for me. And for sure I will find some difficulty in that. Because I'm difficult, not you are difficult. So give me the strength to go through that. That's basically the essence of Kunti Devi's prayer. Tatra Tatra Jagat Guru Bhavatva Punar Darsham Punar Bhava Punar Bhavata Darshanam. She's praying to Krishna, send me one problem after another. Because through those problems I can see you every time. So basically the idea is you are sending me a particular situation, takes me out of the comfort zone, represents a difficulty, but I cannot pass that test without your grace. So whenever that comes, I take shelter in you, and by doing that, I end up seeing you. That was the conclusion of the whole sequence. You. I have your darshan. It began as difficulty and concluded in your darshan. So if that's the ultimate meaning of difficulty, now that's the point. You have to be skillful in dealing with difficulties. Again, difficulties doesn't mean the situation is difficult. You are difficult and you are projecting your difficultiness on the situation. And it feels difficult. You are difficult. So stop being difficult. And pray for that. So, and even in praying to God, okay, I will pray to, okay, I will allow challenges to come to my life. Okay, I won't pray for easygoing stuff. I will pray, okay, send me challenges, but maybe we can ask Krishna, oh Krishna, please send me a challenge according to my capacities. To my present capacities. No, it doesn't work like that either. Because you are supposed to go beyond your present situation. So instead of asking Krishna, please send me challenges according to my capacities, you have to ask, please send me capacities according to the challenges. You follow? That's the way. Because if not, you always remain in the same situation. I have this capacity, Krishna, so you know where I am. Just send me challenges that will keep me here. That's not a challenge, by definition. So I don't want challenges according to where I am. No? I want a challenge to take me to where I should be. So send me whatever skills I need to deal with those challenges that will come to take me there. So it's important that, again, we keep this faith that whatever comes to our lives, whatever is the result to our prayer, whatever is Krishna's reply to it, we should keep trusting Him. He knows why this is sending it. I should not doubt of His integrity. And God will never send me a test that I cannot pass. I have to know that for sure. It's not that He sends something And you, oh, Krishna, I think you weigh way beyond here. I cannot pass this one. You miscalculated my adhikara, and this is impossible. And Krishna will say, yeah, it's impossible unless you take shelter in me. No. That's the idea of the whole challenge. No, the challenge is, I'm sending this, you try by yourself, separate from me, it's not working, impossible. Take shelter in me, possible. Krishna says in the Gita, Maya Shakti, this illusory energy of mine, is very difficult to transcend. But if you take shelter in me, it becomes easy. So he's making this point. So the idea here is that, no, we need, whatever he sends me, I can pass that test by taking shelter in his grace, by growing, by changing. That will happen in a certain by developing again new skills, new capacities, increasing my adhikar to deal with reality. If reality seems painful, it's because I have to grow to deal with that reality. That's why it's painful, not because the situation is painful, because I'm too small and I have to grow a little bit more, so that won't be painful any longer. I have to develop a new sense, level of acceptance, bigger picture. Okay, now it's no painful. I can accommodate reality now. Now, suffering generally means I cannot accommodate reality. And I cannot accommodate, not because reality is unaccommodable, whatever, there is some word for that, but it's because I have not developed the skill for accommodating that. So I have to grow in that. And when we grow, it may hurt a little bit, because we may have not exercised that muscle for some time. If I keep my arm like this for 3 years, and now someone said, move the arm. Oh, no, it's painful. So since it's painful, better I will never move my arm. So you lose your arm. You cannot use your arm. Better start to move. It pains, less pain, no pain. And I have an arm, I can use it. So the same with the heart and all these internal muscles that may be dying of atrophy and calcified over lifetimes. And now start to move a little bit. Oh, it's painful. But you have to understand why it's painful. I do not deny it's painful, but if you understand why, then you keep using that. Again, keep chanting, keep eating sweets, that the jaundice will be cured. No, but it's bitter. But you are being cured. Try to understand the process. So, and again, I know prayer maybe entering into that domain may still be a struggle for most, but something that may help in those moments is try to become aware how much God is aware of us. No? Because if not, sometimes we may drown in our own struggle. No? I'm trying to pray, but it's so difficult. Ah. But if you for a moment get out of yourself, understand you are not the same, and oh, Krishna is lovingly witnessing your attempt of prayer, three gurus, they're accompanying you, they know who you are, which are your necessities, way better than you know yourself, and they're making all the arrangements for that to happen. That gives way, not to give the attached to a result, but that's reality. You are not alone in that in that project, if you will. No? So that gives support to realize they are there. I'm doing my part, but I'm not alone in this whole thing. So it's important to recognize God's position. As we spoke in the first class, first, what's the name? Who is God? Who is He? He's trustworthy. I shouldn't doubt Him. Who He actually is. Nam Sambandha, as we say. First, who He is. Then, who I am. No? All these layers of recognition. Who God is. Okay, that's in place. Then, who I am. Where I am. What's my potential? We are units of potential, my Guru Maharaj will say. We are not Mayavad, no impersonalism, no nihilism. We are somebody. So who is He? And properly respond to that, have that clear. Who I am, all that I can be, have that clear. And then, what's the shared bond between us? Don't forget that part. So it's Him, me, us. Like Guru Maharaj will say, you and I become we in love. Some unit. Beloved, lover, love. Does it triad? Do you say triad?
Triad.
Huh? Him, me, us. Beloved, lover, love. Somehow to create this type of triangle, this type of connection, so the thing keeps flowing and it doesn't get like stuck somewhere because you forgot who he is, who you are, or what's supposed to be in between us. So remain, prayer means to remain aware of those things, remain, inhabit those concepts again. And of course, the very fact of recognizing who God is and who I am, one of the implications of that is to understand I cannot do his job and he cannot do mine. I cannot expect that to happen. No? You follow? To recognize which is God's position, which is my position, well, I mean, that will make it crystal clear, neither can take the place of the other. No? Neither can do the job of the other. As we say, God is infinite, he has infinite power and mercy, but it doesn't mean that he will become us and do our part. He's not that cruel to eliminate us. No? So he cannot do our job of, again, being receptive, of crafting our kripa patra, our mercy container. We have to do that, fill the holes and all this stuff. He cannot do that. You have to do that. He's doing his job, as we mentioned. We have to do ours. He cannot do our work of praying. You're going to pray to God, Krishna, please pray. Pray for me. Not pray for me, but instead of me, you do it, the job, please. He will say, I love you, actually. I am not that cruel. I'll allow you to do that part. So again, it's not so much a question of being worthy of causeless mercy, as we say, but just being properly positioned to catch the mercy. I have the container at hand and in place. No? Again, prayer means to that. Be receptive. Do your work. Be in place. Mercy is flowing. Are you there? Is the container there? Are there still holes there? Are you doing something to fill the holes? If something of those things we could do better, then concentrate on that. And don't complain and don't blame others. Be, have integrity. I always jokingly ask devotees like that when they are like with some long face and they like, or whatever, some expanded muscles like this, like, and they're like, what's happened? No words. It's like, And generally, when I question, like, how is your chanting? Not number, how many chants drowns is the chant, but how is your chanting, your prayer going on? And I would say like 108% the reply is like, no, it's not happening. So that's why you have that face, basically, you know? Because you are not doing your part. You are not doing your job of being receptive. That's your part. That's your job, your business in life. You have no other business. Lesson Rasa once said, we have no other business apart from surrendering. That's our business. We may be a counter and work in marketing, but our real business is give yourself to prayer. So in that moment, just give me a few minutes of your valuable, precious time. In those moments where we are praying, really, when we are entering, trying to enter in that spirit, that's the moment where you are yourself in the most real sense of the term. Who you are, you can see that when you are in the moment that you are praying in the best possible way, that's you. Then you can find try to identify with that version of yourself. Because we have so many versions, no? From the most embarrassing and non-confessable versions or whatever. But you are that person, you, who you are, and all that you can be found in that moment when you are praying or trying to pray sincerely, humbly. That's yourself. And that's when recognize who God is as well. Or you are trying to be yourself as much as you can, you will see who he is as much as he is. Who is he? Our particular, if you will, version of God, Krishna. Not the version, but the way of saying face of the Absolute. Who is our Krishna? No? He's a really, just to conclude with some words in this direction, going back to the idea of chanting to render service and give pleasure. Okay, who I am and who is he? He's a really needy person in a transcendental sense. Because, as we always say, love fulfills all our desires, but also it can always grow and expand. That's the nature of love. It's paradoxical. It's totally self-satisfying, but it opens the door for a further becoming, eternal. So in that sense, God is dissatisfied as Krishna. He's always, he can always have more. He can always love more. He can always celebrate more his fullness. There's no end to that. So that creates necessities because of love. We have necessity because we don't have love. Krishna has necessity because he's full of love. So it's not about stopping being needy. It's about quality of necessity. So Nam Seva, if you want to play, make a play of words, Nam Seva has to take you to Kam Seva. Kam means desire. To serving the desires of God. Nam Seva is service to God. But what does it mean service to God? Kam Seva. To serve his Kam. Krishna has Kam. It means desire. So he has different desires. He's full of desires. Nanda Maharaj knows that. When Uddhava said, no, your son is God, he has no desire, he's self-satisfied. Nanda Maharaj said, no. That's not happening here. Here we are in Braj. No? So if you want to speak about Krishna, speak as Krishna as he is. He's totally needy. He's full of desires. And so on. So the point is, when we are chanting, we are entering that world, basically. The name of Krishna is not different from Krishna. And the noun will reveal Guna, Rupa, Lila, Parikar. Will reveal the form of Krishna, the qualities of Krishna, the Lila of Krishna. Lila means there's someone else to have Lila with. And those are Parikar. So the point is that those things will be revealed in time through the noun. Means all the things are already there in the noun. It's not that they are not there and will come at all that is there. So in the name, not only Krishna is there, not only Radha Krishna is there, but it's Radha Krishna, Lalita, Visakha, Chandravali, Subal, Sridha, Madhu, Mangal, Yashoda, Nanda, and long list of eternal associates, cows, insects, Braj, every, or the whole Dham is there. Nam Seva, Dham Seva, Kam Seva. So when we are chanting, you are entering Golok, technically speaking. Although you may not be at all aware of that. But what Narottam Das Thakur is saying, Golokir Prema Dhan Harinam Sankirtan. That's a famous line. Harinam Sankirtan, the chanting of the name brought by Mahaprabhu, Golokir Prema Dhan. That's the gift, the wealth of Prem coming from Golok. So that's the point. I'm not creating my own philosophy here. In the name, Golok is descending to your life. So when you are chanting, you are about to enter that world, to enter this whole realm of great need. Because there's so much love, there's so much need out of that love. So service is will be required from you. You are entering there to serve. It's not just I enter to, again, Krishna, just for you to have an idea how deep is the chanting, it's not just, I want this, give me that, I'm trying to influence you. No. Radha and Krishna are dying of separation from each other, and I need to help to save their lives on a daily basis. You can imagine how much intense necessity of service is there. Sometimes it is say, for example, someone who has deep affinity towards Manjari Bhav or Radha Dasyam, for that devotee, the name of Krishna, the three words, Hare Krishna and Ram, all of them will be names of Krishna. They won't conceive Hare as Radha. They will conceive Hare as Hare, Krishna as Krishna, Ram as Krishna, Radha, Raman. So they will sing the Maha Mantra in Manjari Bhav, pronouncing these three names of Krishna, thinking, I'm pronouncing these names to my Swamini, to Sri Radha, because she's dying in separation of Krishna, so I have to keep her alive. So I'm chanting to give her hope, to give her relief, to give... So that's a very interesting concept. So there are different ways of addressing the chanting, but my point is, there is a need of service in the chanting. So needy they are. We think we are needy here. That's a joke. Take a look at the daily dynamics of Vrindavan. We are reading something of that these days. If you pay attention, you realize, my gosh, they are like dying for each other, and they are willing to die to help each other, to get reunited, and all this is so intense. not to get scared, just to understand how much do I have to prepare to enter there. The intensity of emotions of every day. And you were telling me yesterday, but Maharaj, you read only one part of one, all that is happening just in one day. And we just got a glimpse of one part of the day, and we have to go through the emotional implications of all, not only things are happening on the outside, no? Going, running, entering, coming, this is it, but what's happening in the inside, oh my, that's and what I'm supposed to do there, because I'm wanting to enter, what I will be doing in the midst of all that is happening there. So needy they are. So when we perceive how needy they are, we will perceive our service prospect there. And that, all that will be revealed through the name. Because I want to go there for serve there. So there is such necessity of service there. How will I offer myself in service there? So much. So we will collapse in a transcendental way. No? There is one verse that comes to mind. And I told you in advance, today may be the longest class, so bear with me. I mean, I won't go for one more hour, but give me a few minutes. There is one verse from Rupa Goswami. Probably we could say, at least personally I like it a lot, and probably it's the most famous verse about the holy name. Tundi tanda vini ratimbi tanute tundavali labdhaye karna kruda kadambini ghatayate karna arbudhe vyaspriham chita prangana sangini vijayate sarvendriyanam kritim no jane janita kiyat viramritai krishneti varnam dvayi. Famous verse. Which Rupa Goswami basically say, I don't know how much nectar is in these two syllables. Krishna, Krishna. So much nectar that when I enter in touch with that, my whole system collapses and I start to pray to Krishna, give me more tongues. I only have one tongue. It's an injustice. I cannot do justice to the nectar coming. I give me more ears. I only have two. No? It's an injustice from the Creator. It's so much what is coming from this name, and so much I would like to offer back. But I'm not even able to have the proper patra, the proper container to deal with such a shower of nectar. So please multiply my organs so I can receive that and do something with that in service. So, anyhow, as Guru Maharaj likes to say, no, the sadhu is a desperate person. Krishna is desperate, Krishna is needy, so it is the sadhu. And we are there to become desperate because of their desperation, and what can we do to serve them? When we identify with the service necessity, then our identity comes forth. We can only have spiritual identity out of spiritual identification with the spiritual necessity of service. That's an important point to make. Identification with the service will be for spiritual identity. If you want spiritual identity, that will come the more you identify with the neediness of service. And remember, Harinam Chintamani is Chintamani, so powerful, it can give you Siddha Swarup, it can give you spiritual identity, but Srinam won't fulfill a desire that you don't care to have. You follow? No? I mean, by the quality of our own desire, while praying, while chanting, we will determine what Sri Harinam will give us. Don't expect to receive a Siddha Swarup if you are not identifying with the service necessity that will require a Siddha Swarup for that to happen. And many people just aspire to finish their daily quota of chanting. How many people does not aspire for that? A lot. And they get just that. They want to that to happen. They will do it. I finish my daily quota of 16 rounds, 4 rounds, whatever. Finish daily quota. Okay? Harinam Chintan say, you want that? You have that. No problem. Daily quota. But the goal of Harinam is not daily quota. Okay. Like Rupa Goswami is saying, I chant half a syllable, so much nectar is coming in this syllable that I chant half a syllable and I collapse on the ground. No more daily quota. Now his daily quota is half a syllable. Now we hear Parasthakur chant relax. But we don't hear Rupa Goswami chant relax. Probably he'd never finished 16 rounds. He chanted half a syllable and collapsed on the ground. And saying this verse, no? Oh, no, Janiti, Janita, Krishna. How much nectar is in this two syllables? How much nectar is in this two syllables? And you will see Rupa Goswami crawling, rolling on the ground. How many rounds did you chant to Rupa Goswami? Did you finish your daily quota? No, like, so, to try to understand, we have to do our part. If you don't care for something more, you will reach that. Krishna doesn't put pressure. He's famous for reciprocating with whatever level of relationship you want. He's very respectful for your individuality. As you approach me, I reciprocate. I won't impose myself. Because he says, I want to love you, and love has to be voluntary. No? It doesn't make sense if I force you to love me. If I bring some gun and love me. And you say, there's a second option? No. So, is that love? What's that? So Krishna's not putting pressure. He's famous for that. So if you want Krishna to be pleased with your daily sadhana, with your finished quota, he will be. He will be pleased with that. Because you want that, okay? He agrees on those terms and conditions. Okay, that's what you want? I won't impose myself. But that standard is not set according to our ultimate potential or to Krishna's, what he will like. It's more to our present appetite. No? Standard established at that point. And probably, as one friend of mine say, no, that standard will be established just to taste the security and satisfaction of general devotion. No, like, I have my quota, I have everything in place, no anxiety, everything is fine. More like Vaikuntha-like devotion, no anxiety. The no anxiety bhakti. No? Some people just address Krishna and chant and pray just to security, satisfaction, everything is in place, no anxiety. Okay. Krishna's okay. But that's Vaikuntha, that's not Vrindavan. So if you want that, no problem. There's a planet for that in eternity. He's not condemning that. He's giving a place of that eternally, but that's not Gaudiya Sampradaya pointing where it's pointing. That's quite different from the passionate obsession of the Ragatmikas. When you are just willing to satisfy his appetite to the fullest, not you setting the standard according to your appetite. Krishna, please agree with that. Sign here. Send me to Vaikuntha. Okay, he will sign. But Braj is something different. Braj is, you are obsessed with satisfying their appetite, with serving for their needs. That's the path of Braj. That's Raga Anurga Bhakti. Following to the passion of Braj. You have to be passionate in that sense. And the same is applied with their relationship with the Guru. If you want Gurudev to be satisfied with your daily quota and to be a nice disciple on some generic level of certain comfort, okay, he won't impose himself and force, because he's like Krishna, he's not putting pressure. Guru is representative of Krishna, representing the same agency. So if you want to keep the relationship of a certain level, with certain, tasting some, again, security and satisfaction, that will be the relationship. Okay, but again, that's not what our school tries to promote, but most, in a sustainable way, try to go further. Like Mahaprabhu will say to Ramananda Roy, Eho Bahya, Agi Kaha Ar. That's superficial, go deeper. So again, this, my point with all this, I'm almost finishing, don't try to resort to the mantra, to the Nam, to prayer, to Harinam Chintamani as some magical formula that will make up for the part that I have to put myself. No? I mean, there is no mantra, no magic, religious, charming, and formulas that you can create. They won't have any effect if your personal will is inadequate, inappropriate. If your heart is in the wrong place, don't expect the Maha Mantra to feel for that for you. No? So in that sense, in prayer, we have to be, of course, in prayer, there's a passive and active side. Now you are here, open to what Krishna wants. You have receptive to hear what he's trying to tell you. Also, you're active simultaneously. You are trying to do your part. You're trying to have full dependence, no? And full responsibility. No? Try to harmonize these two. Full dependence, it's not just a passive thing. Whatever you, Krishna, send, I'm standing doing nothing. You're taking responsibility, trying to improve your will in the context of dependence. harmonizing these two, that's prayer proper, we could say. That's the spirit of prayer we want to walk constantly. Mm-hmm. So this way, gradually, and with this I'm finishing, I promise you, gradually we'll be growing in our prayer journey. Again, there are levels of prayers, as we say in the beginning. We have to begin somewhere, and that somewhere is wherever we may be now, not even today, now, today. So in the beginnings, yeah, prayer may take the form of a more generic praise, copy-paste praise or whatever. It's okay, we are not condemning that, but gradually we'll turn from something more, if you will, internal and intense and passionate. Not from praise, there may be appeal. Well, have this word, appeal, in English, appeal. Mm-hmm. That will create some... So it's like it's saying from satisfaction to thirst. No. So from praise, thank God you are so merciful, I'm so happy to be with yes, great, and then appeal, no? Or again, satisfaction to thirst, no? What we call the emergence of the chataka spirit, no? You know the famous chataka bird in our Vedic tradition? This is a bird which is said to only, and this is a good meditation being here in the rainy season in Madhu. Because this is a bird that only lives, sustains his life. It's a mythical bird. Probably, if you do some scientific research, you won't find him on Earth. But it's present in the Vedic lore. So the chataka bird is a bird that only subsists on rain water. No? So the idea is, I don't want to take anything from here. I only want to survive of what comes from above. And I'm always looking upward. No? Like I'm always attentive to divine descent. And maybe a thunderbolt may come and kill him. Like, open me. But I only want something that can... That's my the determination. Only what comes from above. Whether it's rain, whether it's no rain whatsoever, dryness, whether it's a thunderbolt. But if it comes from above, it comes from above. That's what I want. So the chataka spirit has to do that. This is like an archetype, if you will, of exclusive hope. Because again, we are asayatmika, only looking in what direction. Determine, I only want what comes from above. Exclusive determination, but also exclusive hope. Something will come. And of course, something will come. To say that, in another words, there is firm determination and hope for us in prayer. Grace will reply to my prayers. Grace will answer. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, the result of that, the chataka is praying to satisfy his thirst personally in that direction. But the response of heaven, if you will, the compassion of heaven, will be not just one drop to fall into the mouth of the chataka bird, but will shower to the whole land. So the whole land will be blessed by that single person's hope and determination. So again, as we say before, for someone who is praying in a chataka spirit, not only that person is being blessed, but that person is invoking a whole torrential descent for many other people who may never realize they are being blessed, but that saintly prayer person. Prayer means the person, you know? That's how we can conceive prayer as service to others also. No, it's not that those who live in a hermitage are not helping anyone. They are totally selfish. No, actually they are deeply steeped into universal compassion and watering the root by which all the branches will be fed. And like this chataka example, the rain will... And everyone else will be nourished even without noticing that. I remember once Tulananda Maharaj saying one class I like that he said, this whole world and all the planets remain in their orbits by the prayers of the saintly people. Because if not, the sinful, load, baggage of so many put together will make the whole earth like, not like when Barahadev, the earth was coming down. But what keeps the planet Earth in orbit and floating? The prayers of those few here and there that nobody knows. But they are keeping the whole creation alive, if you will. As they say, love makes the world go round. Literally. We make that here. Not the prayer, the loving prayers of a real lover keeps the world in orbit going around and helps us to survive. You know? And, despite we see so many crises sometimes in the world and pandemic, and the, without the prayers of the saintly people, this will be over like thousands of years ago. So that's an interesting way also of conceiving prayer. I want to end on that note, because prayer is not only just about us or even us and God, but it's all encompassing. So, sorry for the extension. I know that this thing should be spoken, and only this class, I should give it in four classes, but we only have 1 week of retreat. No? Next time we can do a 3-month retreat, and I can like not kill you of an overdose of every class. Then you can hear the recording 1 week, dividing for 15 minutes and try to digest. So let's conclude here, and of course some little homework before, if you want. The classical homework will be, of course, apart from chanting, while trying to be aware of these things, of these points. Try to journalize, thinking about what can you do in a realistic way in your present situation to improve your quality of prayerful chanting. What can you do to become prayer yourself? And of course, if you want, you can conclude by composing an individuated prayer about praying. No? And that's a good... And this, we, you have already been doing that, but with this one you have no excuse. You have to do a prayer. Yeah. So let's conclude here. I don't know if there are any questions or comments you would like to share before closing the curtain and putting our discussion to rest. Krishna Jivani?
You said something about... when you were talking about like praying with peacefulness, or like you go to Vaikuntha planet and pray there, like in peacefulness, I was wondering, how do you say something? How is the word? Anxiousness? Not in anxiousness, but like very like, oh, I chant my 16 rounds or my 4 rounds and then I'm peaceful. Mm-hmm. I was wondering with you, because we wanna, what we aspire for is to go like with the Vrajavasis, do they pray in anxiousness sometimes? Do they have anxiousness, or is it anxiousness more like a transcendental anxiousness?
Yeah. All the things that we find here that are unbecoming, like anxiousness and all those things are in Vrindavan, but in a transcendental form. So they are anxious, like we read these days, no? Like Yashoda is seeing Krishna and he's not fed enough. He has to eat more. She's anxious, but in the context of divine love. And that anxiousness is increasing every day. Not that every day Krishna becomes more, how is it, fat or whatever. Oh, okay, no more anxiety. She needs to be anxious. That's like an anubhav of her batsalya bhav. No, her parent maternal love expresses itself as an ecstatic symptom in the form of anxiousness. No, that's one of the 33 vyabhichari bhavs. Anxiety, of course. They're come and go. They are not like... and the anxiety is not the one we know here, again. It's anxiety when you love. First you have to love, and then you understand what's the anxiety there. But yeah, they pray in anxiety, but not to Krishna. They, of course, nobody prays to Krishna in Vrindavan. No, they pray to Narayan for the sake of Krishna, in anxiety. No, Krishna's going today to the forest, and Yashoda and Nanda pray, may Krishna be protected today in the forest. He's walking barefoot, may have no problems, and this, and Narayan, please bless him. And there is some concern about their love, no? Because if you love someone, that's Rupa Goswami said, you will always be concerned about the person. If you love someone and you have a date with someone that you love, and the person is 1 minute late, you start like, what once had happened? Or even if he's 5 minutes, okay, in time, but still, he's not here. Maybe he has some love. So that's a symptom of your love, basically. It takes a form of anxiety, but it's increasing the loving, ornamenting the ocean of love like a wave that comes and nourishes itself. Yeah, Vrindavan is an interesting place that we need to properly understand that. So to keep appreciating that and see the glory of it. Yeah. Something else? Okay, we conclude here. Tomorrow we have our last day of a retreat, officially. Of course, then we will have Janmashtami and Dotsav and Srila Prabhupada Sabir Bhav Mahotsav, which will be kind of part of a retreat extended closing. But tomorrow is like more the official last day, in which we will be doing whole day of mauna. No? Krishna says in the Gita, of secrets and silence. So we will try to connect with that side of Krishna, secret side, and we are invited to be in silence the whole day, to hear those things that will be heard in silence. Silence is not absolute silence. If there's no absolute darkness, there's no absolute silence. But it helps us to pay attention to some other things. And of course, also, the idea is for those who want, again, this is not an imposed force thing, but we will be invited, since we will be in silence and having some extra time probably, to chant a little more than usual. And for those who will like, there's the invitation of chanting 1 lakh, which is a very interesting number. And many times it has been phrased in Shastra. Again, it's not about counting, but it's again, as we say, going beyond the normal number and see ourselves beyond that. What happens when the number does, it's no longer as important, if you will, and going. So 1 lakh means 64 rounds. So with your blessings and permission, I may try that tomorrow. I'm a slow chanter, so I may need some time. I probably may not be coming to all the arctics or morning programs. I will try my best, but I'm a slow chanter. But we'll have class also. I mean, it's silence, but not that much silence. We'll be giving Harikata, which of course is above silence. So we will be having our morning lecture tomorrow, where we'll be sharing some concluding remarks, some recap of the main points seen through the whole retreat, also inviting all of you to share whatever you may like to share about your experience in the retreat. That won't break your silence vow. That will be in the morning, and in the evening we will be continuing with our evening lectures as well. So those things will be there, but in between those, yeah, we are invited to try to get internal into our prayer and chanting in this particular day of Navrata. So Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Sri Harinam Prabhu ki jai, Sri Sridhavji Gopal ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Priman Haribu.